Oh, yeah. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting, fun-filled episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, where we tell you about all the terrible things that are going on in the world and the universe, and then make jokes about it in order to cushion the blow for your subtle, terrible mind control that still exists inside your mind, even though you're listening to this show. Believe me when I tell you, you're currently under some form of mind control. You know how I know that? Because I know you've probably never questioned whether or not you're under mind control. See, all these preconceived notions, all the things that you believe in, all the things that you have biases in favor towards, are the things that shape your thinking. And that is called mind control. Controlling the mind in a certain direction for a certain end. And if you're in denial about whether or not you're under some form of mind control, name me a subject that you will listen to that you really strongly disagree with, and you will listen to it through the whole way before making a comment or making a judgment about it. See, there's some certain subjects that don't fit into that category, are they? Okay, those are your blind sides. This is the way of recognizing what it is that you're dealing with here. You're dealing with full spectrum dominance of your own brain over a successive period of time by extremely well-financed, well-researched, and well-practiced techniques of mind control. If you're in university, mind control is pretty simple. The basic in-your-face mind control techniques that are employed by the military and med school, law school, that kind of thing, these are the basic things. Repetition. Remember how you got to memorize all of that stuff? All right. And you got to do it again and again and again. Repetition's a form of mind control. Sleep deprivation. You know how you got a whole bunch of tests and things of that you got to do? Or if you're in the military, you get woken up in a shock state by them banging trash cans with batons and things like that at like 4 o'clock in the morning to get you out of bed. That's a form of mind control, the old sleep deprivation. You name me one person who's ever gone through law school or med school and got a good night's sleep every night, or even the majority of the nights. My brother told me that when he was going to chiropractic school, there's this one time, and he's so poor that all he could afford was his ham sandwich. And he had the bread, he had the butter, but no ham. So he walked up to the deli just up the road, and on his way back, he fell asleep while he was walking. Stumbled a few steps down the road and then woke up again. Your brain shuts down under those kind of things and it becomes more receptive to being told what to do and being forced to do things, forcing yourself to do things when you're asleep, when you just want to go to bed, all right? And it destroys your mind to a degree, and it does subtle damage that in some ways, I don't know if it's actually entirely reversible. There's been plenty of cases of people who've gone through successive years and years of sleep deprivation, repetition, and herd mentality, silo mentality. Anybody in med school that goes, oh, well, actually, cannabis can cure cancer, everybody else suddenly ridicules them and laughs at them, etc., etc. And that stops that person from having any freedom of thought, and they go, oh, well, I better not say anything unless somebody, some other authority approves of me saying it first, because otherwise I'll be ridiculed and ostracized from the group. I might lose my medical license that I spent 7 years of comprehensive mind control in order to get. It really is so perplexing to sit here and know that I am currently suffering under several forms of mind control. Whether it be what was programmed in me from school, having to get out of bed real early in the morning when I wanted to sleep until noon. Whether it be by the fact that I was ridiculed by almost everybody in my class for thinking originally. Or whether it was having to repeat and rehearse and do exams and things like that, where there is no interpretational answer. There is a correct and an incorrect answer. You either get the correct answer or it's not correct. There's no interpretation or interpolation or any freedom of movement or thought available within the school paradigm that I was involved in. Nor was there any freedom of thought allowed in university classes that I went into. Even did the best essay of my life and I'm an incredibly smart but incredibly lazy person at his heart. And this is the first time that I ever actually wrote an essay like I meant it. And it was brilliant. And the topic was anti-television discourse. For the street ghetto people out there, that's talking smack about TV, saying that it's bad. And brainwash people, mind control them, and that kind of thing. Didn't use the words brainwash, didn't use the words mind control. I wasn't even familiar with them at the time. But what I became very perplexed by is that all of these books for source material that were listed within the examination protocols were about anti-television stuff. So I read those. This is the first time I've actually ever read source material. And I mean, like, actually read the whole book, several books, in a matter of a week and a half. You know, I was really, really getting my head into this because it was deeply intriguing to me at the time. And it turned out that all my assumptions about how bad television is, what it did to people's memory with the news reporting, and all of this kind of thing, all of these thoughts that I had on my own, it turned out that these people had already written books about it like 30, 40, 50 years ago. So I finished this essay. I get it in. And they give it back to me with a D minus. You know, now I'd shown this thing to the father of my best mate, who was an English professor there at the time. And he said it was absolutely brilliant. But they gave me a D minus. Right? It was then that it clicked for me that this is not the right learning institution for me. In fact, a deeper realization dawned. There was no learning institution for me. So I went into workforce and started making a shockingly large amount of coin for a very young fella at the time. I was like 20, 22, been busted for frickin' weed a year earlier. And here I am making $700-$800 a week. Went on to make like $1,000-$1,500 a week, you know, within a year of that. But all these people that I was working with, they weren't my friends. All these people that were, patting me on the back for getting good numbers and things like that, and making the company a lot of money, they weren't my mentors. They weren't my friends either. I was alone, and I'd been reduced to a solitary unit of value. However much nicety everybody had to me only had to do with how much money I was making. They didn't really care. And it struck me that this has been the problem my entire life, is that I've always sought to get people's approval because I don't want to not be cared about. Now, it's a very profound realization for a 22-year-old to come up with. But here it is, right now. And it was only until maybe 10 years later, you know, up until like yesterday kind of thing, that I realized something about why I needed other people's approval and why I still do. Is because I'm needy, just in a general kind of way. And I think that I was programmed from a young age to not feel like I can do things by myself. To not feel like I could take risks and take personal responsibility for the risks implied in my actions. I didn't feel like the world was a place that would accept me. And so naturally I found myself in the most unacceptable profession known to man. A conspiracy theorist, talk radio show host, YouTuber. We're the scum of the earth. People want to purge us from this planet because we threaten their mind control, which they are clinging to so desperately because it has constructed their entire life for them. They've never had to make their own life for themselves. when you are cast out and you realize that you're an outcast and you can't go to work anymore because you have panic attacks, because you can't work for people anymore. You can only now work with people. That's a big shock to the system because it limits the options by which you can live your life. And you have to create all new ones in order to fill the gap. This is what my career has been all about. Filling the gap between what I want society to look like and how I want to be treated by society as. People that criticize this show, generally, in a lot of ways, most cases, have never even listened to an episode. If you listen to a single episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, you will have a radically different idea of what the show is about, what I'm like, how I behave, what language I use, how deep the thoughts and the interpretations and the very questioning of the fabric of reality itself truly is. I like to go to extremes at all times. If you're not breaching some glass ceiling, if you're not breaking new ground, if you're not making new discoveries, if you're not doing something that you feel is important enough to devote your life, your being to it, then you're wasting your time. And that's the mind control. It's trying to prevent all of us from being who we really are, from being the best we can be, because what we really are and what we can truly be is dangerous. Oh, so dangerous. Specifically to those people who want to dominate, those people who wish to control, get power over others. Activists don't do that. Very rarely do they do it for the money, or the fame, or the recognition. Mainly because there is no money in activism. There is no fame in it. There is no recognition. Not in its purest form. And the only people that have been able to monetize activism are those who do not engage in activism themselves on a personal basis. People like myself, for example. You can call me an activist, sure. But I do not engage directly to the level that real activists do. The people that I bring on this show. Specifically, because to get them the recognition and the coverage that they deserve, to get them on this show in the first place, to organize for them their Skype phones and sometimes even have to walk them through it, that kind of thing, it takes a lot of commitment and it is a full-time job. This is my form of activism, which is giving a little bit of a platform to the activists themselves, their ideas, their struggles, their pains, their joys. And the reason I do this is because I feel like I owe them something. If you've got a reasonably comfortable life and society itself isn't just falling apart at the seams, like you don't look outside and all of a sudden there's bombs dropping or there's people killing each other in the street, if there's still reasonable order and comfort despite the scumbaggery that's going behind the scenes that people don't notice when they look out their window, then you have kind of an obligation to help those people who help keep it that way. It is only because of the activists in your community that your community hasn't gone to shambles already. These people are there when you are not. They are at the public meetings when you're at home enjoying your afternoon off after getting off of your long, hard slave labor job. These are the people that are taking notes, that are making recordings, that are reading documents, legislation, making submissions, these kind of things. That is the coal face. That is the hardest job, principally because it's the most dull. You seriously, if you were to sit there in court, if anybody's ever been to court, it is the most dull experience that you could ever wish not to have. So labored, so slow, so convoluted, so nonsensical, so unentertaining as to make you fall asleep even when you're about to be convicted of a crime and go away for a very long time, and that stress itself is not enough to keep you awake to hear the end of the freaking judge's summary. Oh my God, it's so painful. And the fact that these activists are willing to sit through that kind of thing, the things that they learn. You can sit there for 10 minutes. It's kind of like editing. I'll sit there and I've got like maybe 3-4 hours of footage that I took across several cameras at a protest. Several speakers, double camera angles, wireless sound, the whole thing. There's a whole lot of fluff. And the people don't even know they're doing it. Everybody says, Everybody says, Everybody says, maybe, or that's very interesting. Or everybody's got some kind of tick. Words that they place in there, they just slot them in while they're thinking of the next thing to say. Instead of just speaking a little bit slower and allowing the words to come out as they come to you and appearing more practiced and more versed at the art of communication. So when you're sitting there and you're editing out all these ums, all these ahs, so that these activists sound artificially good at speaking, who don't get interrupted because I cut those bits out, who don't get flustered and forget what they're doing and then look at their page to remind them and then start speaking again. I cut right to the bit where they were starting speaking again. This is what I can do. Because, let's face it, entertainment is our addiction. It is the strongest form of mind control, is to be entertained to the point where you forget what's going on in your own life. And indeed, that's actually the point that people cite when they say that they're just watching TV. Oh, I just want to escape for a bit, you know. As if there's a justification in that. As if escaping reality itself is some kind of a wise move. Activists don't do that. They very rarely have time to get entertained because they're always so entertained by what it is that they're doing. To watch, it's very dull. But for them, yeah. That's how it works. And that's how it works in court as well. These activists remember those little snippets. They leave out all the ums and the ahs and the dithering, but they always come up with these beautiful factoid bullet points from these court cases and things with all these people that I've interviewed that the mainstream media never report on. I'm not talking about like they hardly or occasionally report on. I'm talking about the stuff that I have never, ever seen reported. Because let's face it, the mainstream media, corporate media, the boring, very dull, unenergetic, polished style has taken away all real emotion. It has taken away empathy. It has taken away that sense of crisis and urgency from the voice and the character who's presenting you the news. What's problematic about that is when you hear that 100 people have died in a monotone, your body feels the stress, but your brain does not. And I think that your brain needs to be stressed. I think you need to be terrified. You need to be upset. You need to be emotional in order to properly and fully engage, just so long as that emotional pressure and stress is not constant and it isn't blaring out at you all the time. Otherwise, it can be nerve-wracking and destroy people. Sometimes they need to be destroyed so that they can be rebuilt, remade. There's an old philosophy, in fact, I'm not sure if it's an old philosophy or anything, but I'm sure somebody thought it up before me, is that the only real lessons of value in your life will be the ones that have cost you the most. It's very true, isn't it? You can just think about all the different versions of yourself that might exist if you lapse that trauma back, that trauma, because ultimately it's your trauma, it's your fear, it's your sheer terror, that anger, all these negative emotions that get triggered by negative experiences indeed become the greatest teachers in your life, which is why a whole lot of really, I would say, naive / ignorant people don't want to have any negativity in their life. They're all about the positive, okay? Because they've suffered enough, they think. They think, oh, you know, I've learned everything I need to know, and every time I've had to learn something else, it's messed me up even worse, blah, 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 blah. And I'm thinking, you know, maybe you're going to get addicted to comfort. You know, the problem with getting addicted to comfort is you become weak through not having your metal tested occasionally. It's kind of like how in Switzerland, you know, the Swiss Army knife, that kind of country. Apparently, everybody has to be fit in that country because everybody's an official member of their military. They have no standing military, but their entire population stays fit. Their entire population gets taught how to shoot, gets taught guerrilla warfare tactics and things like that. So if anybody's stupid enough to try and attack them, they blow the bridges and just wait the bastards out. Full-on guerrilla war. There's very little defense you can do against that, and you need at least 10 times, allegedly, the force coming up against a guerrilla army, because a guerrilla army will lose 1/10 as men because they ambush 10, 20, 30, 40 men, wipe out an entire platoon with a few landmines and a few well-placed sniper rounds to take out the leaders, disorient the group, and then slaughter the rest with machine gun fire. And then they just disappear into the wilderness. But if there's not 30 guys there, if there's actually 300 guys there, then they develop a hell of a lot of bigger problems, because there's no way you can fight a force of that size. And the same is true with the assault on your mind. You can't fight an enemy that big without losing something. You keep getting all these terrible stories every day. They're either demonizing something you know to be good, or they're promoting something you know to be bad. And it creates the schism in your mind that drives you slowly but surely insane. Insane with anger, insane with fear, insane with hopelessness. Oh dear God, when are the sheep going to wake up?
I've been trying to tell everybody for years that the New World Order is coming, that there's a creepy global government that has a shadow hand into everybody's asshole. But people won't believe it.
Of course they won't. Kind of like how everybody in America and New Zealand and Australia and the UK is getting fat. Because we have 10,000 advertisements on average per year getting shown to children. Advertisements for bad food. So it doesn't really matter. Or at least it's not a cure-all simply to be a good parent. Because honestly, with today's wonderful society, you don't really even have the time or the energy to be a good parent because you're too busy freaking working. And by the time you get home, you're just too dang tired to parent at your best. Isn't that an inherent trap? This is what I'm talking about. Having constant anxiety, constant stress, constant unfinished business. It destroys your ability to even know what makes you happy anymore. Interviewed a psychiatrist once. And he said one of the questions he finds interesting when he asks his patients is, what makes you happy? Half the time they burst into tears because they don't know anymore. They've been living on autopilot, mind-controlled slaves. And what they've been told makes them happy is getting a new piece of equipment, new car, new clothes. But they found that although it makes them feel good temporarily, it makes them look nice, they feel empty inside because all the admiration is for something that's on the outside. They don't get admired or looked up to or feel good because of something that came from within them. Only something that came from without. Something that came from without that had no real internalizable power. Nothing that you can convert. Nothing that you can create out of absolutely nothingness and do it. They found that when you work the opposite way around, you reverse engineer it. If the person created that piece of clothing themselves and then wears it, they do actually feel happy because they feel proud of themselves because they had a hand in doing it. They didn't just bust their ass for an extra couple of hours so they could buy a bit more of expensive dress shirt that had a nice design. They actually busted their ass for quite a few hours building that thing themselves from a design that they had in their head that they had to will into existence by sheer elbow grease. And they feel a lot better about that because they changed their own appearance using their own skills and didn't require working for anybody else or purchasing a product off anybody else in order to accomplish that feat. That makes you happy. That's why people who are inventing things are generally too busy to care about what's going on the TV because they're too busy creating the stuff that winds up on the television. You know, we've been controlled into the point where we want to be a spectator instead of a player. We'd rather admire the extremely fit, extremely big, extremely strong players on the field rather than going to a gym as often as they do in order to get that physique for yourself. Okay? There's a difference. And not everybody can be a football player. Not everybody can be a talk radio show host. In fact, if you probably got a better chance at being a pro footballer than you do a talk radio show host, to be honest. It's a tough gig. You got to turn up a couple of minutes before your show, realize your guest isn't there, and that you're going to have to talk about whatever it is that's on your mind for 2 hours flat without missing a beat and without complaining about it and without breaking character. Did you know that I failed improvisation class at university? Not true. Did improv class. Fails. And then here I am, improvising 2 hours a day, 4 days a week. I wonder how many of the people who passed that class are actually doing as much improv in their daily life in terms of their business than I am. Probably say none of them. Not by a long shot. This is the difference between doing things yourself and needing things to be done for you before you receive any recognition for them, you know? That kind of thing. I've always got so many people out there who are, I don't know, I love the term running around as if they're actually running, but people don't run anymore, do they? Unless they're actually trying to keep fit, and in which case they're jogging all the time, which just releases a hell of a lot more muscle-eating cortisol into their to their muscles, and so they don't grow muscle, they just wind up shedding important fibers, make themselves weaker so that their body's lighter all of a sudden so that they can keep going for further distances for extended periods of time, as opposed to sprinting, which can make you bulk up like a wrestler in real short succession because of the overwhelming amount of human growth hormone that is exerted when you exert yourself for short periods of time, just like you would if you're in the Stone Age and you're being chased by a tiger. You run for your life, you get away, and then you rest. We can keep walking, maybe. You know, pretty straightforward like that. But people are not allowed to think in this way anymore. You're not allowed to think that everything that you've been told is a lie. Because, ultimately, people aren't allowed to be told the truth. All right, telling people the truth is a naughty, naughty thing. You ever revealed a secret? Yeah, of course you have. Everybody got secrets. And everybody at least tells one or two other people. You know? There's a real dark secret that's happened to you in your life that you don't really feel comfortable about. Maybe you still feel raw about it. And then, have you ever had that secret betrayed? Okay? See, that's the same sensation that people get when they've been living a life that's a complete lie. Same sensation when you tell them the truth. It's like you're telling very personal, private secrets to one of their worst enemies. And you think that people are going to be happy? You think they're going to thank you for that? I see so many truthers go out there, just like I did in the early days, thinking that I was going to change the world, thinking I'd expose that 9/11's an inside job and be able to convince people on the street and engage in these conversations, thinking it'd be easy. You know? We'll expose the New World Order, this will all be over by the time I'm 25. Nope! Took 100 years to get this puppy. 100 years. Since the installation of the Federal Reserve, to give us the society that we've got now. Thanks in no small part to the nephew of Sigmund Freud, Edward Bernays, who literally wrote the book called Propaganda. He didn't write the book on propaganda. He literally wrote the book Propaganda and coined the term. Same with public relations. And what these advertising institutions have been doing ever since Bernays' day have been figuring out and perfecting the art of manipulating people. Manipulating them to different ends. Are you going to manipulate them into being inert? So powerless that they don't feel that they can move? Or are you going to manipulate them into buying something that they don't need, that they probably don't even want, so that you can profit from it, from your trickery, from your scumbaggery, concoct a formula by which to trick almost every human mind to buy your product. Now, you might say that that's a little bit of a thing. Oh, you're manipulating every human mind. That's impossible. That's impossible. Yeah, it is. However, to say that there's not a mind on this planet that is manipulated today is nothing short of insanity. I think it's actually closer to the opposite. I think there are very few, if any, minds in this world, including mine, that are fully deprogrammed, that actually are their own being, who aren't having their thoughts controlled by past experiences and things like that, who aren't shut off to certain areas. Somebody who's actually totally open, totally enlightened, and not weighed down by all of their past trauma simultaneously. I know plenty of people who are enlightened. I know plenty of people who've done amazing things. But they're still damaged individuals. Damaged goods. All right? And I love them. Because I'm damaged goods too. In a lot of ways, all the best people are. Now, I wonder, is that the point of this existence? Let's say it's a holographic universe for a second, that NASA's predicted or said, or something like that. Holographic universe, it means this is a game. Now, what if the game is to suffer a bit and then turn that suffering into victory? Maybe that would be the point of life. Did you start off really crap existence. And instead of letting that crap existence defeat you, you defeated existence itself by resisting it successfully. Resisting it enough so that you do leave a mark. You do change the world. You do affect its rotation ever so slightly. But you didn't have no effect. You didn't have no noticeable effect directly. You know? Is that the point? To make a difference? Any difference? For good? I think so. Now, I've been thinking about this quite a bit lately, about my ego and the popularity of this show, and how the two coexist. And it's my belief that if I analyze my own behavior, my own douchebaggery sufficiently, I should be able to prevent myself from turning into some kind of monster. But also, because I'm broke constantly, because unless I ask and say, look, people, I really need you to donate to the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I'm really, really bad off. I've got like $6 in my account. I am really hungry all the time because there's no food in the house. I'm really cold all the time because heating the house up is incredibly expensive and we can't really afford to do it. That I can't even go out and have a drink at a pub if I wanted to because I don't have the money to even really buy myself one beer. But I do spend a shockingly large amount of time in my office working just so that I can have this existence. Now, unless I make, you know, some real impassioned plea like that, people don't donate. They just sit there, they listen to the show, they enjoy it, they learn something, or whatever you get out of it. But because it's given to you willy-nilly, you think that it's worthless. And you don't value it as much as perhaps you should. And you don't think that maybe if you didn't have the option to get it for free, would you pay for it? Doesn't matter, really. As far as I'm concerned, just enjoy the show. Put it out free for a reason. It's more likely to reach more people if you can just easily share it out. But again, people don't take a part in the responsibility. I think the inherent responsibility is if you listen to any good alternative thing, specifically an alternative thing, but actually more to the point, anything that's good, like genuinely good, not a false facade, not like, oh, I love X Factor or American Idol. I'm not talking about things that are advertised and have shockingly large amounts of budgets. I'm talking about independent people, independent media. If you listen to any of it, you need to in some way support it. For some people, they can give money. For other people, they're broke ass. And if you're broke ass, don't donate to me to support my broke ass, okay? There's a reason for that. If you can't take care of yourself, you can't take care of other people. I've learned that. And I don't want to be in a position where I feel guilty because somebody's kids are going hungry because I was going hungry myself and asked for money, okay? Don't want that kind of guilt. Don't want that responsibility that I live so that others may suffer. Don't do that to me. Don't do that to your kids. Don't do that to yourself. And the other thing about this whole money situation, is that, have you ever noticed that if you don't have a certain amount in your bank account to cover all possible bills that could have come in, you spend the time in constant anxiety worried about that next bill. You get frustrated every time you have to take money out of that account to go and get something that you need to survive, like food. That's a real piss off. I'm sitting here, and for no reason, like with nothing going on. Just because I know my bank account's below a certain level, and because I know certain bills are going to come out soon, I'm in a constant state of stress and anxiety. Isn't that a real piss off? And I know that I'm not the only one feeling this. Everybody who's on a low-paying job, some kind of, you know, slave scum existence, working for some faceless, nameless parasuit. Anybody who's working for fast food restaurants or doing this kind of meager existence, if you're not a high flyer, it shows that the Telegraph article was true. Money can buy happiness, but only if it's like 70 grand. Anywhere near above it doesn't buy you the happiness. And I figured that that's the reason, that very reason, that tiny little part of your mind that is telling you that a certain bill is due soon is going to keep drilling at you until that bill is paid. All right? Or until such a time as you have a sufficient bank balance that you could pay it by just flicking your wrist. I think everybody deserves to have that kind of comfort in life, apart from sociopathic criminals who steal other people's ideas, take other people's lives, and generally just parasite off of humanity itself. And everything that's good and great about us, they don't possess. And everything that's bad and terrible about us, they created, and they have weaponized. That's the reason why I really don't like psychopaths. Ultimately, they're the antithesis to life. I was having an argument with my friend. I don't have arguments, really. I haven't had an argument in a long time. Conversations I like to have when people are being a dick to me. Then it's not an argument either. It's just them being a dick to me. There's no conversation going on because the conversation goes back and forth. Arguments go back and forth. Somebody just keeps being a dick to me. It's just them against me, them against me. And it doesn't matter how many times I explain it. They don't care. Don't like those kind of situations, but I was having a conversation with my mate about whether psychopaths are really human or not. It's a debatable thing. You know, for me, a lot of things are not really debatable, you know. I like to be pretty clear-cut about what I think about things, but for the psychopath question, I don't know. I don't know if they're human or not. Not at this stage of my research. I mean, I know probably a lot more about psychopaths than most people, but it's a tough one. You have to ask the experts. Ask psychiatrists, ask Thomas Sheridan, other people that have been studying this stuff for a long time. Are they really human to do the things that they do, that be qualified as so inhuman, as to be inhumane, as to not be human at all? And then the other question is, and this is the reason why it's debatable for me, what if we suddenly decided that they weren't human? What if we decided that it was permissible to execute psychopaths on sight? All right, now, for the first week, it'd be fun, you know, you just go into Congress. Hey, look! Oh, this senator, what's his face? Let's have a look at his case history. Yeah, stole that, lied about that, takes bribes from these people. What do you reckon, bro? Do you reckon he's a psychopath? Oh, absolutely, bro. Look at his track record. It's clear. It's pretty clear cut. Let's kill him. All right, bro. All right. You first. Ladies first.
Oh, thank you. I've always wanted to shoot a senator.
Come on. Ah, man, you realise something?
What?
We just stopped the ritualised torture of a whole succession of children that predatory scumbag was feeding on. These guys were getting kids out of burn hospitals and things like that, taking them for trips down to the Bahamas. You know? 10 9-year-old children and about 18 90-year-old men. Sounds really, really sketchy. And so I'm glad that this guy's at least not going to play his part in that. And then you go kill another one. And another. But where does it end? And how do you even define who really is and who really isn't a psychopath? I saw one psychiatrist who's like one of the leaders in the field say he can't even tell you if one of his patients is a psychopath, even after years of conducting study with them. Okay? He can't even tell you because they're that good at hiding themselves. What if you kill the wrong person? What if you kill somebody who's not actually a psycho? They were just a bad dude. They could have snapped out of it. They could have come right if they had a bit of love, if they had a bit of caring. If you give a psychopath love and caring, they always betray it and they always destroy the people who gave it to them. Normal human beings, on the other hand, who are just in a bad place, in a bad situation, who act in a terrible way, they can come back from that brink with the right kind of attention. Not punishment, generally, doesn't work. You know, well, you're saying don't punish people. Of course punish people for you know, doing bad things, because otherwise they don't learn. But I found that people getting locked away in prison for extended periods of time doesn't actually teach them the lesson any better. If anything, it just makes them resent the people who are punishing them for an extended period of time when their crime only took a second to commit. You know, in some cases, I'm not talking about like murderers or something like that. There's a reason why you put people in prison. In my opinion, the only good reason to put somebody in prison, if they are actually a danger to the community. Okay, if they will hurt and kill people, you really can't risk having them on the streets. However, again, what if they weren't psychos? What if instead of punishing them, you can actually help them? What if you go into their life and you go, how many children have you got, bro?
Well, I've got three.
And how many women are those children to?
Well, three.
So you can't maintain a relationship?
No.
Are you by chance from a broken home?
Yeah.
Do you want some male mentoring? You need some support and you want to be able to see your kids again, right?
Yeah.
Not having your kids around makes you drink, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you think about your kids a lot when you drink, don't you?
Yeah.
And that makes you really angry and sometimes violent, doesn't it?
Yeah.
You see? Sometimes the things that are obvious to somebody who's a specialist in the field is something the person in the middle of it, who's too close to the event, doesn't see. And sometimes if your job is to help and correct rather than enslave and punish, you get a much better result. Maybe that person changes their life. Maybe they become better. And this is why I don't really have much of an argument with people trying to convert people to Christianity or to Islam or whatever. You know, personally, I don't reckon the entire world's knowledge is contained within a singular book. So I'm not going to live my life by any singular book, because that just sounds really stupid to me right off the bat. However, there are people who are really, really stupid straight off the bat. And anybody who's ever argued with born-again Christians will know what I mean. Not insulting you if you are one. Because ultimately there's two ways you can go about it. There is the practicing what you preach part of it, which is the best way to do it. Are you peaceful? Are you kind? Are you caring? Are you nurturing? Are you honest? Are you decent? Are you generous? These are the Christian principles which I believe you should abide by. Incidentally, a lot of those same principles also exist in Islam. And you'll notice that if you have a look at the statistics on this, violence and things of this nature are actually, in a lot of cases, ironically, considering the context of history, prevented, or rather don't show up if the people are deeply religious. Religious people have a knack they have an assister that doesn't necessarily have to even be there in order for them to be assisted by its presence. That's why I advocate that people should take up a religion if they got nothing left to believe in, you know? Just temporarily, just to see how it works, understand the impact and the positivity following any religion can really have on people's lives. I've seen it really change people for the better. But understand that just because it changes you for the better, it doesn't mean other people aren't doing perfectly fine without it. And there's no need to convert them or to pressure them or to threaten them with things like punishment in the afterlife in order to convert them to this thing that did good in your life. You know? Let's say, for example, talk radio. Being a talk radio show host has done a lot of tremendous good for me in my life. But you don't see me going around there telling everybody they should be a talk radio show host, because I know it's not for everyone. And it's only when they are actually interested, when they appear that they need to be a talk radio show host, that they've actually got the talent. You can see something in them, that I'll give them a hand in that regard. Other than that, don't know. I'm just doing my own thing. Not turning into a douchebag so far. Not trying to push my beliefs on other people, am I? You wouldn't be listening if you didn't agree with them. I assume so anyway. Because people often turn out what they don't agree with. And even people who are like religious listeners to the Vinnie Eastwood show shouldn't be listening to me as if you're hanging on my every word and thinking everything I know is correct. Hell, I'm a human being. There's no possibility that everything I say is correct. Some of it might be unsubstantiated opinion. Some of it might be misconstrued. Something might be a misquoted fact or something of that nature. You don't know. So before you go and give anybody, you know, journalists or politicians or whatever, your faith that they'll never get anything wrong, that you can stand by them 100% of the time, just realize something. They're actually human. And they make mistakes, just like you do. Unless you're a psychopath, in which case an argument could be made that they're not actually human. But the other question is, what do you really do about it? You know? I mean, look. We've got whole bunches of scumbaggery. They're messing with absolutely everybody. What are we going to do about it? What am I going to do about it? What am I going to do about it is the more appropriate thing. What are we going to do about it is the most disempowering thing you can say. Because that means that you need other people involved in order to make anything happen at all. Right, you can make a little bit happen by yourself, surely. Surely you can. You haven't been paralyzed from the brain down, have you? You can still take action. You can still do things on your own volition to make a difference in this world that you don't need other people's help in order to start doing it. You want to get fit? Don't go and get a personal trainer. Start getting fit. Start exercising. Pretty straightforward. Take those first small steps yourself. Don't think you need anybody's permission or approval in order to do it, because guaranteed, you're probably not going to get it. You know, don't expect encouragement. You're probably not going to get it. Speaking of things that you're not going to get, New Zealand is now protesting against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement outside Parliament. What do you think those protesters are going to get? They're not going to get, you know, sprayed with water cannons or pummeled with tear gas or anything. But they're certainly not going to get the country to just walk away from the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement all of a sudden, just because they showed up outside their place of work.
Oh, there were people with signs outside our place of work who were saying disparaging but true things about our scumbaggery. I think we must have to abandon this quest that we've been on for the last 100 years and enslave humanity and not even have them be able to do this kind of thing. I mean, surely giving in to people who want the right thing is the best way to advance our evil effing agenda.
A naivete. The protest won't work. However, it's a good thing to go to and just to show that you're not just taking it lying down, and film it and publish it. You know, that kind of thing. Always helps the activists out. We'll be right back at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry about that little delay there. I wanted to talk about things that are pissing me off. All right, in fact, there's probably a long list of them. probably the thing that pisses me off most is weed being illegal. It's just such a terrible thing to do. And it's not just the recreational smokers who have their lives destroyed by the law like it did to me, but it's mostly for the medical patients, really. Which brings me on to thing that pisses me off, number two. Pharmaceutical companies. They keep selling you drugs, they keep making you sicker, and they're more expensive than the things that would make you better. Like cannabis, which you could grow yourself. And guess what? They're trying to patent it. GMO that stuff. I've heard a lot of people say that there's some kind of conspiracy, like they're going to try and GMO the heck out of all the weed, and that'll be the only thing that's left. It might be the case, but I don't really know. And it would be very difficult to get everybody, seeing as it's legalised and everything, growing their own and having that all be GMO too. You know, if you don't want GMO, grow your own. That would be the legal thing to do, wouldn't it, once it's legalised? But in the meantime, what happens is you get people like Rangi Pai here in New Zealand spending, I don't know, I think he did a comparison. He spent like maybe 16 grand or something like that, maybe 7.5 grand to get the same therapeutic benefit as from cannabis, as $32,000 worth of pharmaceuticals gave him nothing but pain and trauma and everything by comparison over the same time period with only half the effectiveness. You know, and it's people like him, people who've been like brain damaged or something through car accidents and stuff and being hit by drunk drivers, or the head of Green Cross, Billy McKee, having his leg sheared off by a drunk driver and then becomes a cannabis activist, you know? That kind of trauma, the cannabis and these pharmaceutical industries and the interconnected, it really, really pisses me off, because it's pursuit of profit without regard to its costs. It's real, tangible human costs. This is something that is so inherently bad and affects so many people that it pisses me off beyond measure. Because I see the human suffering, because I'm very empathetic, sometimes I even feel it, and I really want to do something about it, and yet it's not changing fast enough. There are still people suffering, there are still people dying, there are still corporate scumbaggery organizations with all of their paid off lobbyists and things like that rush all their measures through and just make this okay. And can't change it. Not overnight. If you keep talking about it, you keep informing people about it, then maybe it will change someday. Just don't do nothing. Not while people are suffering and dying, while you're living life in relative comfort by comparison. You know? My God. It's inhumane. It's cruel. Really? You know, and the definition of cruel is having somebody like Billy McKee, who's as leg sheared off by a drunk driver, using cannabis for the pain and actually taping the raw cannabis buds to his stump after it's been irritated and things like that, or really hurting when he's walking around on his false leg, and it takes the pain away within minutes and he can actually get some sleep that night. And then having the police raid his home, take what few plants he has, and then force him to go to court and then try to send that man in a wheelchair to prison. That's the definition of cruelty. And it's legal to do that to people. That pisses me off. It leads me on to item number three on the things that are pissing Vinny off. By the way, I'm making this up as I go, just as they come to me. Is the lack of accountability for police brutality. Now, I haven't been beaten up by cops before, shot at or anything like that. I've been shoved plenty of times, bumped into deliberately. I've had them just cross the street, come straight up to me and wonder what it was that was sticking out of my camera bag that's around my belt. It's just a microphone sticking out, and he's like, "What have you got there? What have you got there?" And, you know, like grabs my stuff and just like rips it out, kind of thing. He could have damaged the microphone. He could have damaged my camera bag. Thank God it wasn't destroyed. But the thing is, did I complain about that? No. Not to the police conduct authority or at all. Why not? Because the police conduct authority is staffed exclusively by members of the New Zealand Police. Thank you! It's stupid. It's really stupid. And thus, there is virtually zero accountability for police brutality or any kind of complaint that comes forward. I've been quoting a statistic for a while that I found out was wrong, was that 1,433 people since 1990 have been murdered by the New Zealand Police, and nobody's been to jail because of it. That's actually wrong, and I'd like to print a retraction on that one. It's actually the UK police statistic. So the UK police since 1990 have killed like nearly 1,500 people, and not one of their cops has really lost their job as a result of it. Okay, so the same thing happens here in New Zealand, though, anyway. Whether the numbers are as great as that, I highly doubt it, considering the UK has got 40 million people and we've got like 4 million people. And our police aren't armed, but the UK police aren't really armed either, to a large degree. Armed offender squads that we've got here in New Zealand. But you don't have to shoot somebody to kill them. You know, beat them to death, break their neck, stomp on their heart when they have a heart attack or something, taser a person that's got a weak heart and they have a heart attack, you know. Plenty of deaths, I'm sure. But whatever the number is, I couldn't really know. And quite frankly, it doesn't really matter when you get into these kind of numbers, right? It's kind of like how you talk about whether or not your country's in $99 billion of debt or $86 billion of debt. When it comes to these kind of numbers, it doesn't really matter because we're talking about the lack of accountability. So where are the numbers for how many cops have lost their jobs, been fired from the police force for really badly injuring somebody in an unjustified attack? Or killing somebody in the course of their duties? Not many, if any, as Scribe would say. That really pisses me off. Because if you have people who are supposed to be in a position of fiduciary responsibility, I don't trust myself to go out and into these really dangerous situations that cops find themselves in and know how to make the right choices and know how to prevent myself from getting killed and being in that frontline, very dangerous sometimes, environment. I don't know how to do that. That's why we have police. And I think that's an okay way of doing about it. I would like to see more local law enforcement. I would like to see elections for law enforcement heads, much like they do in the US sheriff system and things like that. But it's besides the point. The current system means that police can more or less do whatever they want to do and not be subjected to real criminal punishment as a result of doing real criminal things. I mean, dude, the amount of trouble you can get in this country just for, like, using threatening language. It's like $500, $600 fine. Maybe you get a criminal conviction as well. Mate, the amount of times that cops have threatened people verbally and not faced any fines or things like that, you could just suddenly start imagining that the number of that would be quite substantial. Because they do it every day as a course of their action, threatening people with violence and things like that. Or what does threatening with arrest do? All right, let's say it's an unjustified threat of arrest for no reason whatsoever other than the person was standing there, minding their own business. The videos that come out of the United States are just shocking. How quick they are to become violent against non-violent people who just simply aren't complying instantly, not treating them as though, you know, got absolute authority over me, that kind of thing. I have a real problem with this kind of thing. These cops should be going to jail. You know? There needs to be two jail systems for that matter, because everybody would know what would happen to a police officer if they went to jail, because a lot of the people that are in there probably don't see their incarceration as justified, and probably a lot of them not. Maybe they got set up. Maybe it was just a coincidence that somebody who looked like them committed a crime in the same area where they were living. What do they look like? Oh, they looked black. You know? So you can imagine what would happen to cops in there. So maybe if you have two prison systems and two justice systems, one to police the general public and the other to police the police. Who watches the watchers? They do. But it'd be very nice if they couldn't be bought off. And so the citizens would have to have their own separate court to police the polices of the police. So the police police the citizens and get policed by these extra judicial kind of branch of government. And then the people evaluate how that branch of government's working based upon how the police are treating them and how they feel justice is being served. That turns into a circle. All right, an unbroken symbol of respect and trust. You can't trust people that you've got no authority over. Nobody has authority over the police. All right, not in your daily life. You can't just go out to a cop and say, hey, you can't draw your weapon on me, I haven't done anything. And they go, oh, that's what everybody says. Pop, pop, and you're dead. And then that's the last thing you say. And that's why everybody's terrified of the cops now. Because there's this huge culture of abuse and using force to get the job done when it's not even required, when it's not even lawful to do it, but they still get away with it. And that really, really pisses me off. I think maybe the reason why it personally pisses me off is because I'm 6'4". You try being 6'4" and getting into any fight and have the blame not be squarely put on you. All right, this is why I stopped hurting people. I think when I was 15 was the last time I laid a hand on anybody. Because I realized at that point that every single time that I was ever involved in any altercation, whether I started it or not, the blame went squarely on me. And I didn't want my life to turn out like that. To hurt people or be hurt by people and perpetually get the blame. So I just avoid situations like that, like the plague. I've taken a few knocks in my time since then, but have I fought back? No. I got knocked on my ass. The person goes, you want to keep going? You want to keep coming? And I'm like, no. Just kind of want to go home, bro. You know, I got a hard head to shake it off. I'm not made of glass. There's something that really irks me about violence, probably because it happened to me a lot as a child. And this is why I really feel there's a lot of need, especially on the behalf of the public, to rein in police violence as much as can be done. Sure, some of it's justified, but ultimately I think it's used far more often than it should be. You know? Far more often than it should be. Should be the absolute last resort. They actually need to be getting attacked before they start being violent with people. They shouldn't be the one to strike first. You shouldn't preemptively hurt or kill people. when they haven't actually posed a real threat yet. If somebody's, you know, yelling and screaming and everything like that, don't tell them to calm down or you'll arrest them. Just say, hey, bro, I'm here to listen to you, man. I'm here to listen to you. But, you know, just talk to me. I'm right here. I can hear everything you're saying. And I'm absolutely listening to you right now, bro. I need you to tell me as precisely as you can what the problem is here. Why you're acting like this, so that we can sort the situation out. Hopefully, you'll be on your way, I'll be on my way, and we're going to have a peaceful resolution to this, and nobody's going to get hurt, all right? And if there's somebody at fault here who's done something really bad to you, or you've done something really bad to somebody else, then we need to make sure that measures are taken to prevent that from happening again. There might be some punishment involved. Okay, so just slow down and just tell me it from the top, bro. I'm here to listen to you. Okay? There's so many situations that can be diffused just by using the right language. And when I've been arrested by cops, they don't use words that I know. That was something that I found particularly interesting. These words like impracticable. Right? They learn these new words that sound kind of like another word, but don't actually mean the same thing. And they just do that. It's kind of like how you get taught at university to no longer say something's got a problem. You say it's problematic, or it can be problematic. Right? You play word games with people, and then they don't know what you're actually saying. And you don't really define what it is that they're saying. So, if we could stop playing word games, if we could just be straight with people, if we could just communicate clearly, that would be nice. Which brings us on to the next thing on the list of things that are pissing me off. YouTube comments. Sweet mercy. Ugh. Mother of unbridled rage. It's just so irritating. I mean, I literally have to go through these comments every day and block at least 4, 5, 6 people that are coming and making these really rude, nasty, cruel, or stupid comments. And I'm just like, I really don't want you to be watching my videos, bro. Don't worry. I can take the loss and hits that not having you watching my videos would do. Just as long as I don't have to take the loss in my own personal comfort and enjoyment of life. An ability to communicate with intelligent people and reply to their comments and things of that nature to make them feel like I actually listen to them. You, my friend, are not listening. You, my friend, are not my friend even. You can fuck right off. Thank you very much. I spray, and then I walk away. These people, I don't know who they are. I don't know what their damage is. I don't know why they think this is a cool behavior. But I do know that every single day I have to put up with that shit. Whether I block them or not, I still have to see it in the first place. I still have to read through the first couple of lines before I realize that this person's just an absolute scumbag and is not worth my time. Please don't do that. If you are one of these people and you like trolling and you like getting a rise out of people, you like insulting and attacking and generally being a dick for things that are unjustifiable, for things that you didn't even listen through the whole way before you made your comment, right? I sent somebody a link and 2 minutes, it's like an hour and a half show. 2.5 minutes later, they're replying with a comment. You didn't listen through it, did you? You don't even know what you're commenting on, do you? And what surprises me most is that there are people who are so freaking dense that they will listen through 2 hours of a radio show that have umpteen things that are said in it, 99% of which they agree with. But what do they comment on? The 1% of things that they don't agree with. The one thing that really gets their goat, the one thing that they are really, really upset about. Because, oh, heaven forbid somebody should have a different opinion to me. I mean, it just defies explanation. He believes 99% of the same things that I do. But he just said one thing that I don't disagree with. And that's the thing that I'm going to focus my attention on. I'm not going to just agree and come along to get along and not be a dick. Fuck that. I'm going to make a comment. Just unbelievable. The aggression that comes out of it. The poor sentence structuring. The constant caps lock key. The 17 exclamation marks. For crying out loud, bro. You're not getting your point across. And guess what? All of these people have in common. Almost no followers. Almost no subscribers. Telling everybody else, including me. It's not just me. I know, because I've read comment sections on other people's tubes and videos as well. How to do things better. How to make you get more subscribers and more listeners and this, that, and the other. Really, bro? How many subscribers you got? Well, I've got zero. let's just back up the truck a bit. I got 21,559 subscribers as of today. And you have zero. What makes you think that you know more about how to get subscribers than I do? Well, you're just being arrogant. You're being like, block. And the scum is gone. You don't have to deal with these people. I know a lot of you have your own YouTube channels, your own Facebook pages and things like that. And you have these dicks come into your life and they start giving you shit, trolling it all around. They're just narcissistic, psychopathic, sadistic scumbags. All right? Keep them out of your life. Give them a minimum bit of room until you figure out how to identify them early. Okay? Because they are a cancer. And they need to be eliminated early so that they do not metastasize, or whatever the hell that word is. Sounds really, really nasty, doesn't it? Metastasize. Kind of like something that you would do in church. I think that the concept behind enjoyment in trolling other people, getting a rise out of them, insulting them, calling them names and everything like that, it's just inherently bad. Okay? Now, unless that person is actually evil, and even then, there's probably no justification for really just giving people crap like that. Constructive criticism is cool. Give them a thumbs up if you actually like it. Or give them corrections. Just say, hey, you stated such and such and blah, 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 blah. But actually, and have a look at this this source link here, bro. It turns out that it's the other way round, where such and such and blah, blah, blah actually did the thing that you said that they didn't do. And it's just this one source here, bro. You know, that kind of thing. Because that way you're contributing something. Tall poppy syndrome. This is another thing that is pissing me off. Because, and for those of you who don't know and you're in the international audience, it's a New Zealand thing. But I'm pretty sure the exact same thing happens to people in your country. Tall poppy syndrome is defined as thus. If you are really good at what you do, really evident that you've got talent and skill, etc., that's beyond most people in your country, people start to give you crap about it because you're better than them at it, all right? And they try to drag you down to their level because of the sheer fact that they can't deal with the weight of their own incompetence. They can't deal with the fact that instead of focusing on their own talents and excelling in their own way, there's somebody else who is doing that, and they get really pissed off about it. Because every single time they see that person, every time they hear about that person, it reminds them constantly of the fuck up that they are. And they want to drag you down, they want to give you grief, and they want to stop you from succeeding. They want to stop you feel good about succeeding at what it is you love to do. Why? Because they haven't. It's just a simple jealousy thing. It's a really stupid thing as well, because instead of being jealous, angry, envious, you could be inspired and you could emulate. You could take something away from that. You could become better in yourself by following and listening to people who you think are better at what they do than what you are. And then lead by example, personally. You know? That's why tall poppy syndrome pisses me off. Because there's no good reason for it. People can't deal with their own incompetence. That's their freaking problem. Block! The scum is gone. You'll notice I do this quite a lot. That's because of late, and in fact for quite some time now, I have become the center. You know, the gooey caramel center of troll activity. And I have devised innumerable traps and snares and obstacles and things of this nature in order to prevent trolls from getting what they want. The best and easiest way to stop them from getting what they want is to stop them being able to see what you're making, stop them being able to comment on the things that you're doing, stop them having a voice that can reach you. Sound very difficult? Sometimes it is. Depends how persistent they are. Some people just go, oh, he blocked me on Facebook. Well, I'll never listen to him again. Thank you. That's the point. But sometimes they'll do chronic harassment. So they'll create several fake accounts and come after you with them one after the other. But then you just block them one after the other. Boom, 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 boom. And they're gone. See? Simple as that. They have no real long-lasting defense against blocking. And that's the only reason why the internet hasn't fallen apart at the seams at this moment, is because people now have the choice. And people don't exercise that choice of who they do and don't want to have in their life. Now, people might think I'm cruel, or, you know, this is just judgmental, or, you know, you're not listening to people who don't agree with you. Absolutely untrue. I listen more intently to the people who disagree with me than the people who do agree with me to a large degree. Namely, because the people who do agree with me, I can't learn anything from. The people who disagree with me, I often learn quite a lot of. But they have to disagree with me just because they disagree with me. Okay? They don't have to disagree with me because they're having some kind of emotional breakdown or reaction or something like that. Or they blame me for something that wasn't my fault. Or place their own neuroses as a justification for giving me grief. Somebody who never apologizes for the hurtful things that they say. Sorry, bro. You're on your own, son. Now, I could take the time out of my day to help you, but unfortunately, I've decided who I will and won't help. And I will only help the people who actually want it. Most people don't want to be helped. They don't think they need it. They don't think they have a problem. And that's the problem. So, thank God you are no longer mine. See, the world is full to the brim of people who want to make their problems yours. Bring me to another thing that I'm pissed off about. Gaslighting. You know what gaslighting is? It's not a funny fart, you know, a thing that you do with a lighter. No. Gaslighting is kind of like a psychological thing, where you get people drawn into your little personal dramas and you get them to feel somehow responsible for it so that you can milk resources and things off of them, right? You try to make all of your problems seem so dark and so terrible because you want these people to feel sorry for you enough that they will put themselves out for you so you can take what they have, right? Gaslighters, they're freaking annoying. Again, keep them out of your life. Somebody somebody you know has been a friend for a long couple of years, and you suddenly start realizing that the only time you actually ever talk to them is when they're bitching about shit? Not good positive people to have in your life, bro. You need somebody who's better than you at something. You need somebody who can build something with their hands, somebody who can create, somebody who can laugh, who can enjoy life. All right? Rather than just be happy that somebody is listening to their own destroyed life story. My God. Can't be bothered with that stuff, man. There are too many people who can be helped that you waste time, that you don't get to help because you're wasting time on the people who don't need it and don't want it. They only seek to waste your time. Right? And if they aren't seeking to waste your time, they're seeking to use your time against you to profit off it, to benefit from your time without any thought of giving back. That really pisses me off. Another thing is politicians and the political system. Now, I know what George Carlin would say about it, like, everybody whines about politicians. Yeah, sure, everybody does whine about politicians, and Carlin's right. All they are is a product of the system. We have selfish, ignorant people who get raised in a selfish, ignorant system. And surprise, surprise, we wind up with selfish, ignorant politicians. What pisses me off, though, is that people don't realize it. That they keep buying into it. That they have this kind of zealotry.
Oh, the Green Party's going to save all the whales. It's going to stop climate change.
Yes, the Green Party alone is going to stop climate change. What about the last 4 billion years, bro? Hasn't it been constantly changing? You know, you can't get through to almost anybody who believes in any kind of political ideology to a large degree. You know, even libertarians. You know, it's really strange. Now, I don't want to insult anybody here or put anybody in a box. But even the people who are part of these political parties will recognize the same process. The de-individuation of self, the de-individuation of thought, the formation of groups, the formation of parties, the formation of teams, the formation of cliques. You know? It all exists right there in the political process. Does it not? You get who you are changed in order to allegedly fulfill a common good. That's fine. I understand. I would have run for parliament myself if I hadn't figured out earlier on enough that it was a scam. However, what's really problematic, and the thing that really pisses me off, is that because people are invested in the idea that the political process isn't rigged, that there's actually a difference between the main parties, that there isn't an overall agenda that's controlled by the banking clans. Any belief that they have in any politician or political party is inherently befudged. Namely because the only media that they listen to about the political contests only cover these false debates, these misrepresentatives rather than representatives. They only cover the things that are irrelevant, more or less. And that's what brings me on to another point. It's about the media. Now, the media pisses me off for a number of reasons, but one of the main ones is that people believe it and repeat it. All right? Belief has to be X'd out to a large degree from the media and the news. I believe this or I believe that. Well, see, I'm a journalist and I've got this backed up case document here with reference notes that have all been cross-referenced and looked over and approved by a number of different editors. And they prove unequivocally that the both of you quibbling scum are wrong. Okay? So shut up. These are the facts. You can either read them and start operating by them, or you can deny that those facts exist and expose yourself as a freaking scumbag. Okay? Now, this is how the media should interview politicians. However, psychopathic politicians have this innate tendency to answer questions without answering the question. And does the media just pull them up on it and go, hey, that's a bullshit answer. You actually need to recuse that, wipe it away, and start answering the question from the start. Because those are normally the answers they give to very hard questions for which there's a very definite answer. And that definite answer ain't good. Okay? The only reason why they want to answer your question is because they know that you're not going to approve of the answer, bro. Okay? That's the frustrating thing. Whenever I watch anything, and I very rarely do, from the mainstream media these days, whether they're interviewing the Prime Minister or any other number of scumbags. And that willingness for that reporter to just sit there and listen to these lies and not pull them up on it. Oh, God. Oh, my God. And the frustrating thing is the public do the same thing. They actually listen to somebody giving a non-answer to a very pertinent question, and they actually are satisfied with the non-answer. And there's no media to oppose it. The competitiveness of the media is the thing that has created the alternative media. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. And because the corporate finance media has not covered the conspiracy realm virtually at all with any kind of with anything other than a jeer or a name call or an ad hominem attack, rather, then something had to give. And voila, we have alternative talk radio, alternative YouTube coming up, alternative blogs that are now getting more subscribers than the mainstream media blogs are, you know? People are crying out for this information, and yet the media still refuse to cover it with any kind of credibility because they're afraid. They'll have their funding put. A lot of these people, they know. They know what's going on. Do they do anything to try and stop it? No. Do they try and help or give advice to or support to anybody who is trying to stop it? No. Why? Because they will lose their job if they do. Right? That's their fear. The media are gutless. So used to a couple of hundred K a year and a trip to Tahiti every winter that you're not willing to give that up just to save your species. You frickin' scum. You know? See, I can't fathom that kind of selfishness. That's why I'm a broke-ass activist with a radio show. They can fathom that kind of selfishness, and that's why they're living the life of Riley to selling people lies. The other thing about the media, what is media? Is it meant to mediate? Let's say that it is its job to mediate. How exactly is there any kind of mediation between the free peoples of this earth? Talking about all their different concepts, comparing notes, and actually pursuing the concept of either intellectual or even physical or technological evolution. How exactly are we supposed to do that when the only people that really have the resources to communicate on a mass scale with everybody at once are the mainstream fucking media? There's nobody there to facilitate the debate in any massive fashion by comparison to how the mainstream media can do that. It's kind of like that film in Fight Club. I see all this potential and I see it squandered. I do not see this ending well for media producers. I do not see this ending well for the careers of these tosspot reporters. What I do see happening is the collapse the whole sail collapse of that whole shifting sand beneath their feet. People aren't even listening to the TV and the news and everything anymore. There's millions of people in the country, but there's only like a couple hundred thousand watching television each night now. You know, maybe a million? Three quarters of the country nearly switched off entirely? Whoa. That's got to be really bad for their advertising dollars. It was really bad for the Media Works, especially because they needed a $40 million bailout without an exchange for any shares by the government, whose communications minister, who brokered the deal, used to be the CEO of MediaWorks. You know, you can't make this stuff up, bro. They're floundering. This is the interesting thing about debt. You know, Donald Trump is a pauper, all right? He got like bazillions of dollars in debt or some shit. All right, well, it's the same thing for the media. It's the same thing for the government. A big paper tiger, they actually got nothing back in them. You know anything? And even the banks don't have anything back in them. That's the other thing that I wanted to really, really pisses me off, is the monetary system. I mean, god dang it, I'm paying interest off of my credit card and personal loans and all of this other kind of stuff, and it's just constantly dragging me down. I can imagine how much freer I would be and feel if I were debt-free. But what's problematic is that the cost for everything is rising, but the quality of the products is not. I have to pay more for the same shit. All the time. And it just keeps on getting worse. And at the time, I was thinking, oh my god, it's inflation, bro. They're pumping more money into the system by loaning more money to more people and devaluing what each dollar is worth so that every single thing that you buy, which is exactly the same thing as the thing you bought yesterday, actually costs more today. You know? In a microcosm kind of way. And it's just in that shifting, sliding scale as they create more money out of thin air by people's signatures alone. They can create as much money as they want. And then take your real assets. Right? That's what really pisses me off about the banking system, is they don't care that they're destroying people's actual lives in order to make fake money that they can just make up out of thin air anyway. The stupidity of that, the scumbaggery, it makes me blood boil. That's why it pisses me off so much, because it's so universal, a suffrage that we all have to pay. Almost everybody's got a loan. Almost everybody's paying off a credit card. Almost everybody's paying off this, that, or the other kind of thing with money that they didn't have in the first freaking place, but some scumbag was willing to give that money to you. You know? Nobody saves anymore. Well, I wouldn't say nobody, but a lot fewer people than there used to be before there was all this cheap credit that they could just manufacture out of nothing, debt-based currency-like. Now, if we could get all our money and all our loans and everything, and they weren't debt-based, like if there wasn't a debit being made, there was actually real money being created, and the amount of money to pay it back exists in the money supply, so that it's not a game of musical chairs, so it's actually equal, that it's actually mathematically certain that a ruthless criminal elite who control the issuance of that currency can't actually get everybody's real assets just like that. That they actually can't do it really at all because they don't even have a hand in it, because the Congress regulates it, because the Parliament regulates it, something of that nature. Wouldn't that be nice? It would be really nice. And that's why when the New Zealand First Party announced that they would do something like that, the media didn't report on it. When Ron Paul talks about something like that, or whoever the hell, it doesn't get reported. Because the banks, you know, they own the media. They own pretty much everything. That's another thing that really pisses me off, is the interconnected nature of all this scumbaggery. Because whenever you're trying to explain this to people about the little connections that go from point A to point B, I didn't come to those conclusions or find out those connections based upon a short conversation with somebody. It actually took quite a few years of research, didn't it? It took quite a few documentaries of watching it, didn't it? Okay? You're not going to be able to get that information across to people. And that's another thing that really pisses me off. People's misinterpretations of what I say. You know, they have a brain fart or something like that, and they completely go the opposite route. So I'm like, I don't know. I'll talk about making sure that scumbaggery needs to be controlled or something like that, that people have real consequences for their actions if they're a sociopathic scumbag. And then somebody says, oh, you just want to throw everybody in prison, don't you, Vinny? It's just like, what the fuck? Oh my God. It's the psychopaths who created the false prison system, bro. You know? You just don't see that. And it's not my fault that you're stupid, but it is your fault. Maybe you should take some responsibility. Read a book. Watch a documentary. Maybe listen to a single one of my radio shows before you shoot your mouth off in disagreement of it, bro. You know? For starters, it's not going to take that long. You've lived in ignorance for 99% of your life. Maybe there's a 1% chance that you might actually come out of this alive. For goodness sake. Why is it that we always misinterpret what other people say? We don't think, oh, this person's got pure intentions. He can't mean anything bad like that. We always jump to the worst possible conclusion as quickly as freaking possible, don't we? You know? And again, mind control. We're all under it. It's affecting every single one of us, even right now. And if you're getting upset by this, it means that it's not gelling with your programming, bro. Maybe you've been watching too much television. Why do you think they call it television programming? Huh? It's because they're implanting a virus into your brain to stop your brain from thinking outside a certain spectrum of consciousness. Probably the one that you could access with your pineal gland if it wasn't calcified from all the fluoridated water you've been drinking. Fluoride. That really pisses me off, man. Every time I go to the tap, I am cognizant of the fact that I cannot drink what comes out of it. I am cognizant of the fact every time that I wash my filthy self that the steam is some kind of chlorinated, fluoridated gas. That the fluoride in the water that I am washing my unkempt self with is absorbing through my pores and fluoridating me. That pisses me off, man. There is no opting out. There is no little waiver that you can sign and go, oh, we won't fluoridate this house. They've got a little valve or something like that. No, all at the central, everything's fluoridated. Even the water that is used to flush my poo down the loo is fluoridated. Where does that end up, bro? Did you know that fluoride's a hazardous chemical? Not only are you putting hazardous chemical waste in people's goddamn water, their drinking water, but it's getting into all their clothes through all of their wash cycles that they're doing. It's getting on all their dishes from their dishwashers. You know, it's getting into all their pores from their showers. It's getting in the environment when it goes down the plug hole. What are you doing? And the answer is, well, we're only disposing of a product that we purchased and it's got medical benefits and is safe and effective, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah. I know because I had it repeated me umpteen thousand fucking times. Why is not mindless repetition good for you? Why are you sighing? Well, because I'm really sick of hearing the repetition, bro. And it just tells me that the fluoride is working, son. Did you know that fluoride's used as a bonding molecule in antidepressant drugs that make people, when they go off of them, go crazy and start killing people and then themselves? Oh, no, I didn't know that. Did you know that the fluoride in the water supply is not even pharmaceutical grade, son? So you don't even, like, flip out and go kill people as you should? Oh, I didn't know that. Did you know that there have been 5,000 peer-reviewed studies on the effect of fluoride in teeth and zero, Virch, on the effect of any other organ in the entire human body? Did you know that? Well, no, I didn't know that. Did you know that when fluoride is in its natural form, i.e. being put into these massive containers for hazmat, because it's so dangerous you can't allow it into the environment, It's called monofluorohexasilicate. It eats through glass. It eats through concrete. So naturally, it must be real good for your chompers. And there's been plenty of studies that have actually proven that it's dangerous for your teeth and damages them with a wee thing called dental fluorosis, which is a light mottling of the teeth. In some cases, it's really unattractive. And they call it moderate fluorosis. You know? And it turns out that, hey, dentists are making a killing off of treating dental fluorosis. All the while, they're thanking the fluoride for preventing dental decay, which they're not making as much money on treating any effing more. Which brings me on to 1080. Another thing that's pissing me off. Not the picture quality. The poison. Alright. 1080 poison. Dig this. You ever heard of a place called Manchuria? It's a place in China. And during World War II, the Japanese invaded Manchuria, and they used a compound named 1080 to poison the water supplies downstream so that people would all die, so that when they marched through, they would have very little resistance because everybody had access to poisoned, deadly water that affected the food chain. And so naturally, when New Zealand gets some possums, which are a furry marsupial from Australia with sharp claws, and they sound really creepy when you hear them in the dark of the bush, but they're actually only about the size of a house cat. Couldn't kill you if they tried. And they say, oh, well, these things have got rabies and they're destroying the bush and all our native forest and they're eating our native birds' eggs and everything. Really, bro? You got any evidence that they're eating all those native birds there? Well, no, but there was this one time when we saw a real bad, like, little rodent or something like that in a nest eating a bird's egg or something like that. Oh, yeah? How often did that happen? Well, as far as we can tell, that's the only time it actually ever happened in the history of the country. Oh, okay. So what do you plan to do about this? Well, we're going to get compound 1080. About $50 million worth of it per year, just to be safe. And we're going to mix it in these nice little baits and things like that. And we're going to, like, colour them green. And we're going to flavour them with cinnamon. So that every single animal in the forest, including our native birds, our native fish life, our native crustaceans, our native bugs, and whatever the FDF is in that fucking bush, is going to eat it and die from it. In order to get rid of these few species of pests that we're not even sure if they like it very much. $50 million a year, you say? That's right. And you just dump it in pristine bushland, you say? That's right. And, okay. See? I'm pretty pissed off about that. Especially because compound 1080 is a derivative of a fluoride molecule. And it gets into the water catchment areas of the bush and into the streams and all of that kind of thing and winds up in your waterways anyway. So you can see the natural progression from the fluoridation of water to the 1080. Yeah. But also, see, brings me to the other thing that's really pissing me off, and the reason why 1080 actually ties into it, is the killing off of natural food sources. You know? It's Agenda 21 protocols. Agenda 21 pisses me off, man. Because remember how I said earlier on in the broadcast that you can't see the scumbaggery when you look out your window? I can. Because I know what Agenda 21 is. I know that when I see any of those cell phone towers, if I see any roadworks going on, if I see any new high-rises going up, if I see almost anything going on in this city whatsoever, it's part of Agenda 21. And that's why it freaks me out constantly. I nearly had a schism attack while we were driving down a highway that was being constructed with my mate Jono a couple of nights ago. You know? Because I can see it. It's right there in front of me. But nobody knows about it. Agenda 21. God damn. What a great conspiratorial thing to call something so that everybody would think it was just a crazy conspiracy theory and never bother Googling it to see that it's in the environment policy of the Green Party of New Zealand. In writing! It's right there! We base our environment policy on the Agenda 21 protocol set up in 1992 at the Rio Air Summit. For goodness sake! And then if you have a look at the wording and the environment policy of the National and the Labour Party and virtually all the other parties, it's all lifted directly from Agenda 21. And that's why it really pisses me off. It is certainly not original. You're listening to The Vinnie Eastwood Show. And thank you very much for doing so. Please go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and donate today.